reading from Habakkuk, chapter 1, beginning at the first verse. How long, Lord, must I call for help, but you do not listen, or cry out to you, violence, but you do not save? Why do you make me look at injustice? Why do you tolerate wrongdoing? Destruction and violence are before me. There is strife and conflict abounds. Therefore, the law is paralyzed, and justice never prevails. The wicked hem in the righteous, so that justice is perverted. Look at the nations and watch and be utterly amazed. For I am going to do something in your days that you would not believe, even if you were told. I am raising up the Babylonians, that ruthless and impetuous people who sweep across the whole earth to seize dwellings not their own. They are feared and dreaded people. They are a law to themselves and promote their own honor. Their horses are swifter than leopards, fiercer than wolves at dusk. Their cavalry gallops headlong. Their horsemen come from afar. They fly like an eagle swooping to devour. They all come intent on violence. Their hordes advance like a desert wind and gather prisoners like sand. They mock kings and scoff at rulers. They laugh at all fortified cities. By building earthen ramps, they capture them. Then they sweep past like the wind and go on, guilty people whose own strength is their God. Lord, are you not from everlasting? My God, my Holy One, you will never die. You, Lord, have appointed them to execute judgment. You, my rock, have ordained them to punish. Your eyes are too pure to look on evil. You cannot tolerate wrongdoing. Why then do you tolerate the treacherous? Why are you silent while the wicked swallow up those more righteous than themselves? This is the word of the Lord.
In life, there are indeed some unanswerable questions. Questions like, if Cinderella's shoe fits so perfectly, why did it fall off in the first place, right? Or, you know, why do we say someone sleeps like a baby when we know babies wake up like every 2 hours? Or, if I'm at a restaurant and I'm waiting for the waiter to come, doesn't that make me the waiter, right? These are tough questions. But these are not the kind of tough questions that actually keep you up late at night, tossing and turning in your bed. No, there are other tough and unanswerable questions that really rock us. And that's why we're gonna be spending some time for the next month in this teaching series called The Struggle is Real. We're looking at the questions and the problems and the struggles that do keep us up late at night. Some of the hardest questions that you will have ever asked. Questions like these ones. Why is there so much evil? Why does God tolerate wrongdoing? Most of us have asked this question at some point when we're going through an especially dark period or a difficult time where God does not seem to be listening and God certainly does not seem to be answering our prayers. And we're like, God, where are you? God, why don't you do something? God, can't you see what's going on here? The questions like these do not have easy answers. Now, the person who asked this question 2,600 years before we asked this question was a guy with this name. Just out of curiosity, how do we pronounce this name anyways? Does anyone know? Just turn to the person beside you, actually, and tell them how you pronounce this name. All right, yeah? You know, is it Habakkuk? Is it Habakkuk? Is it Habakkuk? Some people have said Habakkuk. No, seriously, some people do say it's Habakkuk. And it's actually one of those names that even scholars aren't 100% sure how to pronounce. It's a weird word. It's a borrowed word that comes from the Assyrian language. It gets pulled into the Hebrew language. Some people think that maybe it comes from a word that had something to do with a garden plant. Other people think that this name means to embrace or to wrestle, and that might actually make sense once we see the full story here. So you can actually call him whatever you want. Call him Habakkuk, call him the Hamburglar, call him, just don't call him late for dinner. But who is he? Who is this guy? And why is he asking these deep, deep questions? Well, if you look at the very first verse of the book of Habakkuk, and actually I would encourage you, if you have a Bible or if you, have a Bible app, to take it out and turn it on. There's a lot here. The very first verse says this, the prophecy that Habakkuk the prophet received. Now, that word prophecy is not the normal word that the Bible uses to talk about a prophecy. It actually means heavy load or a burden. So right away, this book begins by saying, this is the heavy burden that Habakkuk carried with him. What was the heavy burden? What was this heavy load he carried? We're gonna find out. And secondly, we're told this was a prophecy that he received. But even in your translations, there'll probably be a little star by that word received, because the word here actually means, has to do with seeing. So this actually means that Habakkuk saw something. So this was the heavy burden that Habakkuk the prophet saw, witnessed personally. He witnessed this thing that's happening that is a heavy burden. And the third word we should probably look at is that middle word, prophet. Just to remind ourselves, what is a prophet? You know, contrary to many people's opinions, a prophet is not a person who can predict the future. In biblical speak, a prophet is someone who goes around and listens for the voice of God, and then in turn is able to speak God's voice, speak God's truth to the people of God. And that meant that prophets often had the very unhappy job of telling God's people things they did not want to hear, telling them times and ways in which they had fallen short or were disobeying God. And I think actually that's probably one of the reasons why you've never read the book of Habakkuk or other little books like it, Joel and Amos, these prophets, because we're a little afraid of what we might hear if we were to open up those pages. Now, I just said that most prophets go around listening for God's voice and speaking to the people. Habakkuk is unique still in another way. He actually spends more of his time not talking to the people, saying, listen to what God says to you, but talking to God, saying, God, we've got some questions for you. And that makes Habakkuk a very unique prophet among the prophets of the Bible. Very few speak to God the way that Habakkuk speaks to God. And so today what I want to do is I just want to look at three things with you this morning. I've given you some notes, some little sermon notes so you can follow along. We're going to look at what was the big question that Habakkuk was asking. And then secondly, what was God's answer? And thirdly, what's our response to it? So Habakkuk had this burden. What was it? God replies somehow. What did God say? And thirdly, what does it all mean for us? Let's start with Habakkuk's question. Habakkuk's question. What weighed on him so greatly? Well, you see, Habakkuk lived the first part of his life during a time of great peace and prosperity. There was this amazing king who ruled at that time. His name was Josiah. And King Josiah was a godly man. He was a great man. And people enjoyed great times under his leadership. In fact, people thought, oh, surely there's even better times and even greater times still to come for us and for our whole country. But then something happened and Josiah died. And his sons were terrible, terrible kings. Jehoahaz, one of his sons, was a cruel and violent man. He died. And then Josiah's other son, Jehoiakim, became king. And he ruled for 11 years, and he was a tyrant. He was the type of guy who would enslave his own people and make them work at forced labor to build an opulent palace for himself. He encouraged the worship of idols. He told people to turn away from God. That's Habakkuk's burden. Okay, that's the heavy load that he is carrying. That's why he says, how long, Lord? How long must I call for help? You're not listening. How long do I have to cry out violence to you, Lord, but you do not save? Why do I have to look at this injustice? Right? Why do you tolerate this kind of wrongdoing? What is going on? God, times used to be so good. We used to enjoy such prosperity. What has happened? Why aren't you doing anything? He adds this little piece. He says that the law is paralyzed. You see, that Israel always had this law, and that law was always supposed to keep them on the straight and narrow. It was supposed to prevent this kind of stuff from happening. But now the law, the very thing that created a strong social order, is not working anymore, and nothing's fair, and nothing's right, and there's no justice. The good days are gone. Where did they go, God? Where did they go? And now, how long, oh God, till those days come back? And so Habakkuk laments. He laments what he sees. Now, lament is an important word. Whenever you're reading the Bible and you come across the phrase, how long, it is a code word for a certain kind of prayer, an honest prayer that expresses sorrow, an honest prayer where you vent your frustration and your confusion and even your anger to God in times of great hardship. So in lament prayers, you don't hide your pain. You don't pretend everything is okay. Instead, you bring your raw emotions to God. You bring your big questions to God. That's what lament is. And by the way, that is one of the reasons why we're offering the unanswered prayer course, which begins this Wednesday night, is to help us as a congregation learn how to lament, how to wrestle with the fact that God doesn't always answer our prayers, and how to pray like Habakkuk did. God, why is this happening in my life? God, where are you? God, where did the good days go? And that's what Habakkuk is trying to teach us, that sometimes the good days disappear, and the dark days come, and the evil days come. Sometimes we're like fish that get caught in a cruel net, like men trapped by evil times that fall unexpectedly upon them. See, most people think good times are normal. That's what's normal, good times. And most people think that, generally speaking, as time goes on, things should get better and better and better. Life's supposed to be good and life's supposed to get better. Now, sure, life's going to have its ups and downs, but most of us think that 10 years from now or 20 years from now, everybody will be better off, right? Our kids will have lives that are better than our lives. You know, in 20 years, our home will be worth way more than it is today, right? Our investments are going to go up, right? Our country is going to get better, right? Our lives are going to get better. It's progress. We're human beings. We're smart. We make good decisions. We make the world a better place. Better times are coming. Habakkuk stops you in your tracks and says, why would you think that? How do you know that? You don't know that. Take it from me, Habakkuk says, there are good days, but then there are also dark days that come. There are times of prosperity, but there are times of evil, and there's nothing you can do about it. You just get caught in the net like a fish. Habakkuk enjoyed good times, but now dark times have fallen upon him. And I think he points his finger at us a little bit, and he says, it could happen to you. Who knows? Even right now, you may be descending into some dark days. Dark days can come for whole nations. You know, countries can enjoy times of prosperity and growth, but then come times of war and famine and tragedies, dark days. You know, from about 1870 to 1910, in North America and Europe, everyone felt they were in good times. Everyone felt like things were just getting better and better and better, and we were going to solve all the problems of the human race. There was the Enlightenment. There was all this progress. Humanity was on its way up. And then came World War I. And then came a Great Depression. And then came World War II. And then came things like the Holocaust. And by the 1940s, people in the Soviet Union and people in Europe were starving to death in the winter. Those were dark days. Those were evil times. And people wondered, what happened? God, how long until the good days come back again? It happened before, and it can happen again. Why not? Why not dark days? And dark days can actually also happen for whole generations. Right, one generation may enjoy peace and prosperity, but the next generation struggles. Habakkuk, he's speaking of his own generation. He's like, why did I have to live in this generation to see this darkness, see this kind of tragedy? You know, our parents and our grandparents or our kids and our grandkids, those generations, they may live to see better times than we have, or they may live to see worse times. The book of Habakkuk just says, it happens. It's a reality. You can't do anything about it. Dark days come. And thirdly, those dark days can come just for ourselves as well. You may have years or decades of your life where it's good times. Everything is positive and hunky-dory, and then dark days come. And dark days stay for years, maybe even for decades of your life. Habakkuk, he tells us, guys, it happened to me, right? It can happen to you. Dark days can come. You know, this is an author by the name of Seth Godin who wrote a book called The Dip. And the book actually doesn't really have to do with what we're talking about today, but there's this concept he floats. He said, often in life you can experience like great growth and energy, whether that's financially or spiritually or with your health and your family. Everything is up and everything is to the right. Good times. But then something changes and you find yourself entering what he calls the dip. And when we sense, oh no, the dip is coming, well, we've got a few choices, he says. You can either try like mad to get back to the good days, or what you can do is you can just give up completely and say, it's over, I'm done for. Or there's a third solution, and that is that you actually lean into the dip, that you lean into the suffering, that you embrace the dark days ahead. This could be a picture of your spiritual life as well, because you know many people when they first meet Jesus, we experience growth and we experience joy, and then at some point we enter into what St. John of the Cross calls the dark night of the soul. It's this spiritual dip, and like Godin says, we try to get back to the better times. You know, oh, I want to get back to how I felt at summer camp. I get back to how I felt during the change conference. That was a great high, but you can't get back. Other people say when they enter that dip spiritually, they say, I'm going to walk away from God completely. Or again, we can embrace that darkness. And we can lean in to the dip and go through the dip with God. Just about every spiritual leader that you admire has gone through the dip. Every author that you love, they've gone through the dip. Chances are when you met them or you read them or you went to their conference, they were on the other side of the dip. They were strong and mature and growing. But if you ask them, no. They went through dark days. And you'll remember when people uncovered Mother Teresa's journals. Remember years ago, they started going through Mother Teresa's journals and people were shocked at what they read about her spiritual life. There were days when she said, I don't even think there's a God anymore. So for nations, for families, for you, dark days can come, and why shouldn't they? Why wouldn't they? We can expect they will. And when they do, our question will be like Habakkuk's question, what is going on? How long? Where are you, God? Why do we have to go through these dark days? Now, in the Bible, the normal response to a prayer of lament is God answers back with some words of reassurance. Like God comes back, we say, how long, O God? And God says, hang tight. Behold, I am coming soon. I'm going to fix things up. Just you wait. And it appears at first that that is the way God answers Habakkuk's prayer too. God says, here, Habakkuk, listen to this. Look at the nations and watch. Prepare to be amazed, for I'm going to do something that in your days, something that you would not even believe if I told you. Amazing, right? God is going to do something. The dark days are coming to an end. The good days are coming back. Not quite. God goes on, here's what I'm going to do. I'm raising up the Babylonians. that ruthless and impetuous people who sweep across the whole earth and seize dwellings not their own. Whoa, 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 God, wait. I just complained to you about dark days, and now you're telling me that Babylon now is going to sweep in and sweep across the earth and just destroy everything even more? Yes, God says, Babylon, remember them? They are feared and dreaded people. They are a lot of themselves, and they promote their own honor. Oh, my goodness, their horses are swifter than leopards. They're fiercer than wolves at dusk. Habakkuk is dumbfounded. That's the plan, God. Right? God, I cry out to you, and your answer is, I'm raising up an even more ruthless and bloodthirsty people that are going to sweep across the world and crush everyone, including you, including me, including you, and your country, and your people, and your family. Habakkuk's like, you call that an answer? We're in dark days, and you say they're going to get even darker. I just complained about evil and injustice, and you say, I'm going to send you more evil and more injustice, more violence and more oppression. That's what you're going to do? That's what I'm going to do, God says. The dip is way deeper than Habakkuk thought. The days are going to be way darker than Habakkuk thought. God's plan is to use this wicked nation to punish Israel's corruption and disobedience. Imagine this. Imagine, to give you a little point of comparison, you're a teacher, and there's this kid in your class, and they're constantly ignoring you and talking during class and throwing paper airplanes. And so what you do after giving warning after warning, one day you rearrange the seating arrangement. And you take the worst bully in the whole school, and you sit him right beside that kid. And you say, just go to town on him. Teach him a lesson, right? I mean, you get fired as a teacher. But this is what God is suggesting. And Habakkuk's like, that can't possibly be the plan. But sure enough, this is what happens. The Babylonians, they move westward in the year 586 BC, 15 or 30 years after Habakkuk prays this prayer and writes these words. Jerusalem is sacked, the walls are destroyed, the temple is burned to the ground, and all the people are either taken as slaves or they are scattered throughout the world. This is what's called the Babylonian exile. It lasted 70 years or more. And Habakkuk right now, he is just looking down the barrel. He's looking down the barrel, and he sees all of this coming. So gosh, how long till the dark days are over? God says the dark days are just getting started. So how do you respond to that? How does Habakkuk respond to this? What is your response when dark days come and God doesn't answer your prayers? Well, I want to tell you one response that many religious people take is they acquiesce. If you don't like what God is doing, well, then just keep your mouth shut. Don't ask any questions. Don't complain. Just fold your hands and close your eyes and pray nice prayers. Pretend everything's okay. That is one response. That is not Habakkuk's response. A second response you could take would be arrogance. You know, when God does something you don't understand, then you say this famous line, well, I can't believe in a God like that. If I can't understand what he's doing, if I can't see how this makes any sense, well, then I'm done. I'm walking. I can't believe in a God like that. Maybe some of you walked away from God for that very reason. I don't understand how this makes sense. I can't believe in a God like that. As if your brain should be able to comprehend all that God is doing. But that also was not Habakkuk's response. Instead, he responds in three different ways. First, anger. He says, God, I don't like what's happening, and I really don't like your solution to what's happening. I am furious about it, angry about it. Habakkuk really, really lets God have it. I have to tell you, I don't know a lot of people even here at Trinity Streetsville that pray, who treat God the way that Habakkuk does. But in verse 12, he says, Lord, are you not from everlasting? Now, it's interesting. In the Bible, when you see these words, are you not, it's almost always a sign of some very aggressive, vigorous argument that's happening. So Habakkuk is very close to saying in this statement, he's very close to saying, God, are you nuts? God, are you nuts, right? I thought you were supposed to be from everlasting. Oh, I thought, like the song we just sung, forever God is faithful, forever God is, aren't, isn't that you? Oh, I thought you, I'm sorry, I thought you were supposed to bring salvation out of Israel to the world, but actually, you're gonna let evil and injustice reign? Oh, sorry, I thought you were from everlasting. My bad, my mistake. This is not a prayer, right? This is like a protest. This is not like just folding your hands, praying a nice prayer, closing your eyes. This is pumping your fist with bloodshot eyes, right? And here's the thing. Whatever you're going through, if you're going through it right now, if you're in the dip, if you're in the middle of dark days, believe it or not, God invites you to pray this way. It might make you uncomfortable. It actually kind of makes me uncomfortable. But when I think about it, you know what really makes me uncomfortable about this? It's not because of how aggressive his prayer is. It's because of how rarely mine are. I mean, I very rarely pray with this kind of boldness, this kind of confidence in God. And I know there's lots of people in this room that probably need to work on being less angry. But there's others of us, and we need to get more angry. We need to get more upset about the things we see happening in the world, the injustice and the problems, the things that really, really matter. So on the one hand, Habakkuk's response is anger, and we're actually encouraged to do the same. But the second response is what I'm calling abiding, right? Habakkuk's angry, all right, but he's not going anywhere. Even though Habakkuk is angry at God, he is still praying to God because this is still his God. In fact, just look at some of the language he uses in his prayer. He says, my God, my Holy One, right? It's in other words, he says, you're it, God. You're the only one I've got. I'm not going to anybody else. You know, it's you or no one. It's your way or the highway. He calls him Lord. He calls him my rock, saying, God, this is a mess, but I have nowhere else to go. I'm depending on you all the same. And so it's amazing that on the one hand, he is asking and he is questioning and he is struggling. But on the other hand, it never enters his mind to walk away from God, to stop praying, to stop believing. It's just not an option for him. And I want to say that when Trinity Streetsville is being the church that it ought to be, it should be that kind of place where you can bring your doubts. Whether you love God with all your heart or whether you're completely PO'd with God, this needs to be a safe place to bring your frustration and even your anger. Because God shows us again and again that he would rather we argue with him than walk away from him. Which brings us to one final response that Habakkuk gets to eventually. And that is the place where we finally say, God, I don't understand it, but you do. God, I'm going to assume you've got reasons for what you're doing that I can't understand, so I'm just going to accept. You know, in Isaiah, God says, for my thoughts are not your thoughts. Neither are your ways my ways. God goes on to say, my thoughts are higher than your thoughts. My ways are higher than your ways. God says, "If I know you don't understand this. I know you don't understand why I'm going to bring more injustice and more violence into your life, but that is actually how I'm going to work out my salvation. And you may not get it, and you may not believe it, but I know what I'm doing. I know what I'm doing. And actually, history tells us God did know what he was doing. I just want to kind of end with this idea. You know, 2,600 years later, we know something that Habakkuk did not know and could not know. We know, he didn't, that if the Jews had not been taken off into exile, then they never would have spread throughout the whole empire. They never would have gone to all these ancient cities all over the place, and they never would have settled there. They never would have built synagogues there. And if they hadn't been scattered and established themselves in other places, then God's word would never have been taught and proclaimed to other people living in those pagan nations, right? And we know, but he, of course, didn't know, that if the Persians didn't come in and conquer Babylon, and then if the Greeks didn't come in and conquer Persia, then there never would have been this one language that covered the whole known world, the Greek language, so that people could communicate and everyone could understand You can publish a book and everybody could read it because there was one language. And we now know, but of course Habakkuk didn't know, that one day Rome was going to come in and conquer Greece, and they would establish roads and a safe, peaceful environment where people could move freely from city to city to city to city. So that, and again, Habakkuk didn't know this, but 600 years after Habakkuk lived and died, people were able to carry the good news of Jesus in a language that everyone could understand, along safe roads, to synagogues and cities around the world where people could receive the news of Jesus with joy. We know Babylon had to conquer Judah, and Persia had to conquer Babylon, and Greece had to conquer Persia, and then Rome had to conquer Greece in order. Why all that violence? Why all those dark days? It's ironic, but that's what enabled the conditions to emerge where the peace-filled, life-giving message of Jesus could reach the world. I mean, Habakkuk couldn't have seen or understood all that, and maybe you can't see and understand the reasons for the dark days that befall you. God's purposes are, in fact, much larger than our own. We tend to see the world from our limited perspective, but God is working out a larger plan that transcends our understanding. Suffering is part of a bigger narrative that we often cannot see. This is where we're going to end today, right? We're going to end in the middle of chapter 1. There's more to come for sure, but today, let's leave it in the dip, right? Today, if you are asking the question why you're going through what you're going through, I think the only answer we want to give at this point is, who knows? We don't know. I don't know. You don't know. It'd be nice to have an easy answer, but we don't know what the answer is. But what we do know is whatever you're going through, God loves you. Just look at the cross and remember that in Jesus' darkest days, he did not walk away from you. So in your dark days, don't you walk away from God either. In the meantime, keep praying. Keep questioning. Keep lamenting, keep arguing, and keep joining us here each week as we come back to this study, because church has to be that place where we help each other through the dip, knowing that God meets us in these dark days. Thanks be to God. Amen.